Vítejte u letního speciálu For English, skip to the second minute. Já jsem Anna a přináším vám nevšední epizodu. Chcete si trochu rozšířit obzory a slyšet, jak to funguje s archeologií v jiných zemích? Zajímá vás, jak vypadá archeologie v dalekém Tajvanu na neuvěřitelně rozmanitém ostrově, který omílá rozbouřený Pacifik a od kterého pak můžete prolézt pralesem a vystoupat tisíce metrů až na vrcholky skalnatých pohoří? Chcete slyšet, jak archeology a lokality ovlivňují tajfuny, nebo jak je to s vraky lodí na dně oceánu? Kolik archeologů je na Tajvanu? A jestli na všechno používají už jenom chytré telefony? Pak si pojďte poslechnout rozhovor s tajvanskou archeoložkou doktorkou Ti Hua Chang, který jsem natáčela na Tajvanské národní univerzitě v Taipei. Pokud vás zajímá zákulisí natáčení, tak mrkněte na Patreon a klidně mi tam napište do komentáře. Rozhovor je v původním znění v angličtině. Hi, welcome to the first episode of a Czech Archeo podcast about archaeology and archaeologists in English. My name is Anna and today I will introduce you to a very special guest from Taiwan. Are you curious about what archaeology looks like in different countries? If so, then come and listen to the interview with Taiwanese archaeologist Dr. Ti Hua Chang that I recorded at the National Taiwan University in Taipei in Taiwan. And if you are interested in the behind the scenes of recording, check out our Patreon website and drop me there a comment. It's my pleasure to welcome on Archeo Podcast a guest from a quite distant country, Taiwanese archaeologist Dr. Ti Hua Chang, who is an associate professor at the Department of Anthropology at Taiwan National University. Thank you for coming and sharing your archaeological experiences with us.
Thank you very much for coming to Taiwan for this interview. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to talk about archaeology in Taiwan.
The main focus lies in the prehistoric cultures and the relations between humans and their environment. She focuses mainly on the Neolithic period. And here I would like just briefly clarify for our audience that the dating of the Neolithic period differs in the Taiwanese and European context. When we talk about the Neolithic period in Taiwan, we talk about a period which took place approximately 2000 BC to 700 BC. Mm-hmm. And it corresponds in European context with the Bronze Age, as is the Unetice culture, Tumulus cultures and Ornithite cultures. Right now, we are sitting at the National Taiwan University, and we are going to talk not only about the personal archaeological experiences of Ti Hua, but also about archaeological approaches to excavation and history in the Southeastern Asia country. It is a mountainous subtropical island in the Pacific Ocean, mostly covered by evergreen forests, where the natural conditions differ, of course, greatly from our environment in Central Europe. With the first question, we can start at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Dr. Chang, when did you decide to become an archaeologist and why? Was that a sudden idea or did it develop slowly during the lifetime?
I think many kids like archaeology, right? Mm-hmm. We watched a lot of movies about archaeology and all these exciting new discoveries. But the reason I really seriously thinking about becoming an archaeologist is because after I finished my college, I got a job in a research institution in Taipei. It's called Academia Sinica. And I was working with an archaeologist. I'm a research assistant of that archaeologist. And then what he did was doing archaeological investigations and excavations in Taiwan. So I had a chance to work in the field for the whole year. And during that year, I had excavated few sites and did some archaeological surface survey work. And I was intrigued by the excavation because we excavated a settlement and then there were like burials and the toast holes. So obviously you probably can see houses and then see people bury their deceased members around their houses, all these features. But at that time, I was just finished my college education and I wasn't majored in archaeology when I was in college. So I really didn't know what I was encountering at that time period. Mm-hmm. And I got puzzled by all the features on the site. So after that year, I decided to at least to study archaeology, to know what exactly I found in the site. So that's the time that I decided I wanted to do archaeology, to study archaeology. I didn't really think that I'm going to do archaeology for that long years, but I think I should at least to go study it and see what what I can learn from being in a school. So that's the beginning of my archaeology career, I think.
And to your previous study, when you were in college, you dealt with ethnology. Is that correct?
Yeah, when I was in college, I was doing ethnology. And especially, actually, when I was in college, the department in my university focused on ethnography of the southwestern China. So I studied Tibetan, and then I actually did a month Tibetan course in India, in the Tibetan exile community. So I was really interested to learn different lifestyles and through living with these people, observing their lives on a daily basis. So that was my undergrad training.
So did you also learn the Tibetan language?
Yeah, when I was in college, but I forgot it already. But I used to be good, and I was really interested. It's a very interesting language.
And so you still deal with the ethnic groups in Taiwan, right?
Yeah, now I'm working with two indigenous groups in Taiwan. One is in central part of Taiwan, in the high mountain area. And the other one is in the southern part of Taiwan, and it's called Paiwan Indigenous Group. So I was working with these two indigenous communities for the past 4 or 5 years.
And is their traditional way of life still somehow preserved?
No, not really, because they've during this very harsh colonization period, starting from the Qing, the Han Chinese period, and then the Japanese colonial period. So they are actually forced to leave their original settlements during the colonial period. Also because of the missionization, like the Paiwan tribe that I worked with in the southern part of Taiwan, they were probably one of the first indigenous tribe that being baptized. So they stopped practicing their traditional rituals, not very long time ago, but in the 1940s, 50s. But they are doing revitalization, cultural revitalization activities. That's why archaeology is important. Archaeology can help with this aspect of the work.
And if we look at it from the opposite side, do you think that ethnology and its approach can help you also while you work as an archaeologist?
Of course, it helps, right? Because in ethnology that we learn to respect and then to live with the people and trying to understand other ways of life and trying to make sense other ways of life. And that's also what archaeologists are doing, right? Because we are studying the people that live in different environments or live in different time periods. And then we are trying to understand what they were thinking about, how they organized their life. And then for my work with the indigenous people, this ethnology or anthropological training also helped me to keep my curiosity all the time, not make judgment in the beginning, and then trying to understand their thinking before making any decision. Working with the indigenous people instead of like treating them as a research object, we have to work with them and then live with them, and then through this process to understand what do they think about their environments, their community, their social relations, all those type of things.
And what about the younger generation of the indigenous communities? They already live a normal, modern way of life, don't they?
Of course, they don't live in the wooden houses anymore, right? No one lives in the wooden houses anymore in town. But the way that they interact with the environment, the way they think about their relationship with the environment is actually something that we have to learn from them, because they respect the environment. And then they have different stories of telling them about the relationship that they should keep with the environment. And then the way that they interact with other animals, I learned a lot from them. It's something that teaches us how we can respect other beings, not just human beings, other beings in the world, and then how to keep a good relationship with other beings. And it's all based on different stories that is very rich in the indigenous cultures. I think that's something that we have to learn, especially under current conditions, right? We have this pandemic, climate change, all these tragic things happen to modern way of life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's wonderful that you have here still the chance to be in contact with the indigenous people, because of course in Central Europe we don't have any such an opportunity.
Yeah. And it's wonderful here is we have so many different indigenous cultures. Taiwan is a very small island, but now the central government recognized 16 ethnic groups, indigenous groups, but we are actually having more because some of them already lost their languages or lost their identities. And they have different languages, different ways of organizing, so what we call different social organizations, right? And they live in different environments, because I think you know that the environment in Taiwan is very diverse, right? We have high mountains and plain areas, coastal areas. That's very, very different. And then the indigenous people have been living here for such a long time. So they learned a way to interact with this diverse environment through their long-term experiences living on these islands. And that's something that we have to learn from them. And then there are different social organizations. We have patrilineal societies in Taiwan. We have matrilineal society in Taiwan. We have bilateral society in Taiwan. For example, the Bunong society, they are more egalitarian type of society. And then in the south, the Paiwan society, they are hierarchical society. So it's really hard for people to imagine that on this very, very small island, you can have so many diverse cultures coexisted on the island for such a long time. And this is something that we have to know what exactly keeps them living on this island and side by side for such a long time.
Yeah, and the awareness of this certainly helps you to keep an open mind also during the interpretation of archaeological situations.
Of course, of course.
What was your biggest archaeological find or discovery? And it doesn't have to be important to society or to other researchers, but I mean something that was the most important to you personally.
Yeah, when I saw this question, I was like trying to think of something, but I look back and the thing I can think of is actually happened in Europe. I had an experience when I was in school in Taiwan. I had a chance to join an excavation in Pompeii in Italy. And then we were working with the University of Bologna and the University of Parma, the two universities in Italy, working with the students in excavating Pompeii, the city. And then we are excavating one house. And originally we were thinking it's just a normal house. So we were just cleaning the house and then documenting the paintings on the walls. And then we started to excavate and we found another layer of floor, like 30 centimeters below the current surface. That's something very, very interesting to me. Because it's like in the beginning, we didn't expect that we will find another floor in Pompeii because it's been very heavily researched already. Mm-hmm. So we were there just documenting some of the things that we can see. But because of the excavation, we found another layer of the evidence, people living there, and then it's a floor. And that's very concrete. Mm-hmm. Because in Taiwan, especially I worked in Neolithic, so everything is very fragmentary. Mm-hmm. And we don't really see floors or houses. Because most of the structures here are built by wood, so it's all perished, right? And then so we only can see the post holes and all these indirect evidence to indicate there is structures here. So that was the first time I see actually a floor, a very concrete floor, a whole floor of one room. And that's something actually very different from my experiences in Taiwan.
And if we move further to types of archaeological research, what kind of archaeological research do you usually do? Is it a rescue excavation or just clearly exploratory research?
Yeah, now I mostly do more small-scale excavation, research-oriented excavations. I started from actually rescue excavation, but then after I got my PhD coming back to Taiwan, because I have to teach in the university and the teaching load is quite heavy here. So I only have like a very small amount of time every year to do excavations. And then I don't think rescue excavation is a very properly managed here in Taiwan. And then you all have to work under time pressure. And then so I always work with students and then the local communities. I always invite local communities to join the excavation. So last 2 years, I excavated in Taoyuan, very close to the airport, international airport area. And it's in a park. So I invited local high school students to join us. And I also invited some of the people from the indigenous community to join the excavations. And then the different interpretations will come out from the excavation. Yeah.
I know that you are also interested in the feminist archaeology.
Yep.
I would like to ask you what brought you to this specific field of archaeology, and maybe if you could give us some background and tell to our audience what they can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's actually a coincidence. Because when I was at Berkeley, when I was doing my PhD, Berkeley is the university that like 2/3 of the archaeology faculty members are women. And that's also the place that feminist archaeology is like the dominant view in that environment. So I was trained in that environment. So of course, when I was there, I took classes of feminist archaeology, gender archaeology, those type of classes. And then the feminism, the feminist thought inspired me asking different questions. But when I came back to Taiwan, I didn't really think of teaching it because I was working in household archaeology. It's all inspired by the feminist thinking. But it's not specifically doing gender archaeology. But when I first came back and then I started to think about which course I should teach. The other faculty members here suggested me to teach gender and feminist archaeology because no one taught that at that time. So I started to teach, and then because of teaching, I have to do more research on the topic, right? And then the more I did the research, and the more interesting and inspiring I found the feminist thinking can contribute to our archaeological interpretation and then the way we think about archaeology. And I think the most important part is to always be mindful about this androcentric assumptions of the archaeological interpretation, right? And because of this, then also reminds you that be careful about all the assumptions that implicitly hidden in the archaeological interpretations. And that's very, very important.
Maybe could you give us some specific example where the new interpretation proved to be beneficial?
For example, one of my students was working in Iron Age Taiwan in southern part of Taiwan, looking at one of very common, we call the ornaments, the ceramic bracelets. And before in Taiwan, in the Taiwanese archaeology, people always attributed those bracelets to, they don't think it's important. And then they think it's probably like female ornaments. And then so people will focus on whether it's associated with female skeletons. That's why people started to do research on the bracelet. But also because it's mostly associated with female, so it was thought as not important and not necessary, not a good topic that people should pursue. But well, once my student started to analyze the material, she started to find out that there are a lot of variations of these objects. And it can tell us that maybe for the Iron Age people, the ornaments are varied and it doesn't need to associate it with specific gender. It's the way people think about the body and then what kind of things they will put on the body and how they think of body as a whole. And then there's not just the physical body, it's also these different things that you put on your body. And then, of course, the cloth. But in archaeology, you cannot really see the cloth, right? So these small things that we used to think unimportant is actually very important because it gives us clue to realize how prehistoric early Taiwanese people think of body, think of using these things to identify themselves with someone else or with some groups.
Yeah, I think it's good to be aware of automatic transfer of some interpretation,
yep,
general rules.
Mm-hmm. Or asking different questions.
Mm. You are a director of the Archaeological Society,
yep,
of Taiwan. Could you please give us some little background?
Yeah, Archaeological Society, the community in Taiwan is very small. Because in Taiwan, people don't think if you work in archaeology, you can earn money. You can do it as a leisure, as a hobby, but you won't take it as a profession. So the archaeology community in Taiwan is actually very small. Now, if you are counting people that working in the research institution, museum, university, it's probably less than 50. But if you are counting people work in the fields, the excavators and field investigators, and there are more, but it's still not very big. Now, the Archaeological Society of Taiwan, we have members of less than 100. And it includes different kinds of people working in archaeology-related jobs. So if you count like professional archaeologists, it's not many. So I think it's in like early 2000s, archaeologists here started to think about organize as a group to have a platform to communicate, to work together. So they started to talk about it, but that was the time I was still in the U.S. And in 2017, they established this Archaeology Society of Taiwan.
And is it possible to apply for any fundings or grant through this society? Or is it more about connecting archaeologists?
I think it's more of connecting of archaeologists. But we have like several missions, like promoting archaeological knowledge, because it's not well known here in Taiwan. It's not in our education system. And then protecting archaeological heritage in Taiwan, organizing different conferences in Taiwan. We have several missions of the society. But it depends on if we have enough people to work on these different projects, because archaeologists are very busy in Taiwan working in the rescue excavation, actually. So most of the archaeologists are in the field.
The rescue excavations are concentrated mainly in big cities or also...
Everywhere. Uh-huh. It's everywhere. Because, you know, Taiwan, now we have a lot of industrial park.
Mm-hmm. The whole West Coast.
Maybe. Yeah, West Coast. And then in the mountain area, we have hotels, all those type of developments in the mountain area. And then in Eastern Coast area, it's very popular for vacation. So people will build different houses. And then we have like more than thousands of archaeological sites in Taiwan. So everywhere, rescue excavation is happening everywhere the whole time.
And how does it work when somebody wants to build a house?
Yeah.
They have a duty to make an archaeological excavation, or it's only some regions with archaeological finds?
It depends. We have a system to categorize archaeological sites. So some of the sites have been designated as archaeological sites in the law. And some of the archaeological sites, we know that these are archaeological sites, but it's now being registered in the government documents. So if you are trying to build a house or anything on the archaeological sites that's being registered in the government document, then you have to do rescue excavations. You have to first hire a professional archaeologist to evaluate whether you can build houses here. And then the archaeologists think that you can do it, but there are several things that you have to do. For example, that you have to do rescue excavations, or you have to do test excavation to see if you need to do a whole-scale rescue excavation. But lots of archaeological sites are actually not registered in the government documents. That's the thing that the Archaeological Society of Taiwan is trying to protect. So we are hoping that all the archaeological sites in Taiwan can be registered. We are working on that part now. But if the construction happened in those sites, unless it's construction work that is funded by the government funding, then they have to do archaeological work. If it's private funding, then they are not required to do that. But if it also depends. We have different county governments. Some of the county governments, they are more conscious of the importance of archaeological heritage. They will ask the private company to do proper archaeological work before doing construction. But some of the county government, they don't have funding and then don't really care about the archaeological heritage, then they just ignore it. So the situation is very different.
So you don't have any association or institution which would supervise and care of the archaeological heritage altogether?
No, we don't really have that centralized institution in the government to do that.
In the next part, we are going to move to history of Taiwan. Maybe quite a comprehensive question to begin with, but is it possible to say what is the earliest human occupation or marks of human activities on the island of Taiwan?
I think based on the dating, we have the earliest human occupation dated to 27,000 BP. Mm-hmm. Here we use BP more often.
And was that only one site or multiple sites?
It's multiple sites along the eastern coast. So it's in Taidong County. It's along the eastern coast. There was a series of caves that we found this very early sites. In a very traditional archaeological sense, we call the Paleolithic people. So they are making lithic tools and bone tools. I think that's the majority of the artifacts that we can associate with.
And if we move further, we talk about the Neolithic period, if I'm right.
Yeah.
How was that with the density of settlement and population in that time?
Starting from around like 5000 BP, we started to see so-called Neolithic people living in Taiwan. They make pottery. And then until very late, until like 2000 BP. So it's all like pottery making cultures. And then from the early Neolithic till the end of the Neolithic, we can see population all over Taiwan. That's why we have like more than thousands of archaeological sites in Taiwan.
And are they also in the mountains, in the mountainous regions?
Yeah, it's actually the earliest sites in the mountain area. We say like 2,000 meters above the sea level, the high mountain area. The earliest site can be dated to 4,000 BP. Yeah, so from very early, people already occupied the mountain area.
And is it possible to see any differences in the material culture from the coast and from the mountain regions?
Yeah. In the very beginning of the Neolithic, we see core marked as a common characteristic of the pottery. But as time moved on, we started to see a localization. That's what we call here in Taiwan. So in different regions, we have different characteristics of the material culture and then even different subsistence activities. It's a very diverse situation beginning from the middle Neolithic period around like 4000 BP, 3500 BP. And then till like the 3000 BP, we see like all over Taiwan. So they all have different characteristics in north, in south, in central part of Taiwan, in the eastern, in the west.
The material culture, just as the structure of the settlement.
Yeah. It's very diverse. And it's actually not a surprise because we see the indigenous population. They are very diverse too.
Also.
Yeah.
And if we talk about some typical finds of this period, is it a ceramic most probably?
Yeah, ceramics. And then the finely polished ballistic tools. That's mm-hmm. That's very common in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. They are associated with the different kinds of subsistence activities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And some exceptional finds like
nephrite. Oh, yeah, Taiwanese nephrite. And it can also be found in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. So it's not just in Taiwan. But we only have one quarry in eastern part of Taiwan. One location. We can, based on the geochemical analysis, we can put the mine in one location. But we found artifacts from this location all over Taiwan. So that means starting from the early Neolithic time period, people already exchanged goods on the islands. Mm-hmm. And then around like the late Neolithic or middle Neolithic, these, at least the Taiwanese nephrite can be found in Southeast Asia, like mm-hmm. the Philippines and Vietnam, all those areas.
So we have also evidences of a long-distance trade.
Yeah.
And was it mainly with nephrite or also with another group?
In the later time period, we started to see beads. Mm-hmm. And they are actually, because we don't really see early evidence of beads making in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So the beads in Taiwan are imported from Southeast Asia or southern part of China, based on the chemical analysis of the beads. The interaction in this area is very intense, actually.
And maybe, is it possible to find some evidence of ritual or religious activities of this prehistoric population?
Burials. We have burials, different types of burials, starting from Neolithic time period. For example, the sites I've been working on for the past 20 years, the late Neolithic sites in northeastern part of Taiwan, within the settlement, we found different kinds of burials, the stone coffins and the jar burials. So it's very unique that you have people living in the same community, they're doing different ways of burying their deceased members. Burial is a very common, probably the most common activity that is associated with certain kinds of ritual in Taiwan. So,
are they well preserved?
Like the coffins, if it's made of the stone, those indurable materials, then they are well preserved. But the skeleton is not very easy to preserve in Taiwan. So it depends, different areas have different preservation conditions.
And again, do you see there any differences between the regions, between the coast sites on the one side and the mountains? And
You can see like big trend, but still you can also see variations. Mm-hmm. But for example, the stone coffins, it's very common during the Neolithic time period in the eastern part of Taiwan and then south part of Taiwan. And then the jar burial, it's more like northeastern part of Taiwan. But we also found jar burial during the in the southwest of Taiwan, but it's different from the northern part of Taiwan. Yeah. We see different kinds of patterns. It's mm-hmm. very complex.
Mm-hmm. And most of our audience is surely wondering if there is any evidence of a ships or boats on the prehistoric sites near the coastline. And this also raises the question, how is it with the preservation of the organic material here, such as wood and textile?
It also depends, because we have found sites that is well preserved in the northeastern part of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Because it's under the sea level, so it's well preserved. We didn't find the ships, but we found the paddles. So we know that people use boat to transport things. And it's wooden paddle, so it's well preserved. But it's more later time period. It's like 600, 800 before present.
That is already the Iron Age?
Yeah, it's Iron Age.
But the boats as a whole, preserved objects?
No, we didn't really find here.
And I have to ask, because this topic is really okay. dear to my heart,
yeah.
Do you have any known rock art in Taiwan, such as petroglyphs or rock paintings?
We have one famous petroglyph in southern part of Taiwan, in the deep mountain area, and it's being designated as National Archaeological Site by the Ministry of Culture. So it's very important and very famous, but it's in a very deep mountain area. So it probably will take you like a whole day to go to the site. And it's being protected and managed by the indigenous people there.
And what kind of motifs can you find there?
Different patterns, like mostly concentric circles on the big rocks.
Yeah. So these are mostly petroglyphs, not the rock paintings.
Not the rock painting. It's more petroglyph. Yeah.
And is it often visited by visitors? Because as you said, it's quite isolated, so I suppose it's not too popular for tourists.
No, yeah, it's hard to get there. It's also difficult to preserve it. So the government had to send people to check the condition of the petroglyph mm-hmm. like every year. Because mm-hmm. you know Taiwan, it's a subtropical area, right? So mm-hmm. we got a lot of rains and typhoons, all those type of things. So it's actually make the preservation quite hard for the petroglyph because it's like big rocks outside.
Mm. And do we have any estimates how old the site is?
Not really. There's a debate. It's really hard to say. It's at least 400 years.
In the third part, we will focus on Taiwanese archaeology and its approaches. So, my question is, do you have in Taiwan some, I think for us in Europe, some more exotic fields of archaeology, such as archaeology of Buddhism or Taoism or underwater archaeology or something similar?
We are half underwater archaeology, but it's a very small community of doing underwater archaeology. We don't really have an official training of underwater archaeology program in Taiwan. I think now what we can say the most special here is the indigenous archaeology. Archaeologists started to work with the indigenous people in their old settlements, because during the colonization period, they've been forced to leave their original settlements. And now the indigenous people started to go back to visit their old settlements, the traditional settlements. And then the archaeologists can work with them to document those settlements and then maybe do more research on the settlements. So that's probably one of the very special topic of Taiwanese archaeology. Well, otherwise, the most Taiwanese archaeology focused on establishing the cultural history of the islands.
And so the underwater archaeology in Taiwan is focused predominantly on the ocean areas and coastline, not on the lakes and...
Mainly the coastal. And then as we know that Taiwan has interactions with Southeast Asia, with China, starting from Neolithic, right? And then during the maritime periods, there's like a lot of ships around Taiwan, like people doing trade between Southeast Asia and China and then Japan. And then they will pass the sea area of Taiwan, right? And then so there are a lot of sinking ships in Taiwan Strait and in the Pacific Ocean and in the Bass Strait in the south. So the underwater archaeology here mostly focused on those sunken ships.
Mm-hmm. So in this case, we are talking about a modern period or a late Middle Age?
It's more like around the 17th century till present, because even during the Second World War II, right, there are a lot of ships.
Okay, and if we just briefly look at the history of archaeology itself, when did archaeology become a professional field with some systematic scientific approaches? And maybe if you could tell us about some archaeological pioneers here.
The first archaeological excavation or archaeological work was done by the Japanese scholars. So we will say like Taiwanese archaeology started from the Japanese colonial period. But after World War II, the Japanese scholars, they moved back to Japan. And then a group of Chinese archaeologists came to Taiwan. And they were working in central part of China and excavating those big burials, big temple like the Shang Dynasty and those very famous archaeological sites. And they were trained in the American system. So they came to Taiwan, started to train Taiwanese archaeologists. So we have actually two traditions, one Japanese traditions and one North American tradition that is brought here by the Chinese archaeologists. And this is how this department was built up, because we have two famous archaeologists. His name is Li Ji, and the other one is Song Wenxun. And Song is Taiwanese, and he was trained during the Japanese colonial period by the famous Japanese archaeologist. And then Li Ji was trained in Harvard University. He is a physical anthropology, and he excavated in China, in Anyang, and then came to Taiwan and to train Taiwanese archaeologists.
Is it possible even today to see the difference between these two traditions? I mean, that some archaeologists follow more the Japanese school and others the Chinese or American school or tradition?
Vaguely, not very clear, because starting from the late 1980s, most of the Taiwanese archaeologists went to North America to get their PhD degree. Because at that time, we don't have PhD program here. Most of the students will go to America to get their PhD, so it's more like a North American tradition. But we have few archaeologists, few students went to Japan. We still have that tradition. Some of the students will go to Japan to earn their PhD, so it's more like the Japanese tradition. Yeah. So, but majority are North American trained archaeologists.
And nowadays it's possible to earn the PhD degree also here in Taiwan.
Yeah, yeah. We have PhD program in our department now. Yeah.
What about the local weather conditions? Does it influence the method used for excavations or the state of the sites in general? Because I saw in one of your presentation the example of a site which was hit by a typhoon, and it didn't happen only once. So how do such a natural impact influence the state of archaeological sites?
It can influence the sites, but it can also influence the way we excavate, right? But it also varies, because the situation in Taiwan is very different. So the site I worked on is in northeastern part of Taiwan, which is very heavily influenced by the typhoon. So when we do excavation, we have to take that into consideration. Sometimes the typhoon will be too hard that we cannot work anymore. But if you are working in like southern part of Taiwan or in eastern part of Taiwan, the weather condition is totally different things. Like in the southern part of Taiwan, we have like strong winds, but we don't really have that much rain. So it's not that difficult. But for you working southwestern part of Taiwan, the plain area, they will get flooded during the summertime. And then that, of course, will influence the excavations. I have like stories that my friend was working in southwestern part of Taiwan, and during the summertime, they got flooded. So they have to like use the ship to get people out of the sites. And then some people would like, because it's flooded, right? So if you are not careful, then you probably will be, you will step on some like tools and then you got hurt. So I heard people like getting hurt because of like stepping on the tools, because the archaeological tools are sometimes not very safe, right? different situations. So, but that means before we do excavation, especially the rescue excavation, we have to take that into consideration. And some of the season, people won't do excavation in certain parts of Taiwan because of these different kinds of situations.
And is it possible to predict it?
More or less, but it's getting more and more difficult, right? Because of the climate change, and then the pattern is changing too. So it's getting more and more difficult.
And for example, the earthquake, it will not influence it too much.
Not too much. And you cannot really predict it. So you just have to live with it. And sometimes it's probably safer to be outside in the field instead of staying in the building.
Yeah. Okay. And you as a professor at university, you also lead excavation and train students.
Yeah.
Do you have enough people interested in studying archaeology here? And maybe it's easy for them to find a job as an archaeologist after they graduate.
We don't really have like many students here studying archaeology. For example, this department is anthropology department. So we have like 2/3 of the students are doing cultural anthropology. So just 1/3 are doing archaeology, or even fewer than that. But now we have a new institution in the south. The National Cheng Kung University, they have an Institute of Archaeology, and it's a master program. So they have more students working in archaeology. But in general, we don't really have a big archaeology group in Taiwan. But we have actually a lot of job opportunities because we have so many rescue excavations. We have so many developmental projects. And even during the pandemic, the world economy is so bad, but Taiwan is actually booming, right? We have building factories everywhere in Taiwan. We have different industrial parks. Mm-hmm. And all those areas need rescue excavation. So we are actually short of archaeologists in the field. So we are trying to recruit as many people as possible to work in the field.
Mm-hmm. So it's possible to open the class every year?
Yeah, for sure.
Have enough students there?
Yeah, we have enough students.
For example, at your department, how many students do you have in one class?
It depends on the class, right? Mm-hmm. But normally, if it's like pure archaeology class, if it's undergrad, then more than 10. And if it's grad students, then it's fewer than that number. Yeah.
And do they usually finish the bachelor or master degree?
They finish bachelor, sure. Yeah, but master, maybe not.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. So it's possible to work also in the rescue field only with bachelor?
Yeah. They can do a very preliminary work in the field. And that's what we are short of in the field right now.
And maybe a next question will be about documentation during the excavation, because this question might seem unnecessary to ask because the documentation all looks similar more or less around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that I was and I'm still pretty impressed by the broader use of modern technologies here in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can simplify your life much more than we can imagine in Europe, I think. We keep more distance from that.
Yeah, I know.
And so my question is, do you still draw documentation on paper or do you use...
Yeah, we still do that. We still do that in the field. Yeah, we still do that. But if it's like a large scale rescue excavation, they got more time pressure from the development. They will use more digital tools. But in the university, in the research, we are still using papers and do the traditional drawings. And even in the mountain area, when you do the mapping, Because nowadays we all use total station, right? But in deep mountain area in Taiwan, it's really hard to carry the total station in the deep mountain. So we are still doing the traditional plane table mapping. Yeah. So we still do that. Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. I like that, actually. I don't really trust digital thing.
I was thinking if you don't have some special app already for the documentation of the trenches or something like that.
Oh, no, not
maybe the students have.
Yeah, maybe students do. Maybe students, they do that.
Maybe to close up, I would like to ask you if you could recommend us some book you like.
Mm-hmm.
It could be connected with the archaeology, but also only something that is your favorite book.
I just read two books that I think I would recommend. One is called The Land of Open Graves, Living and Dying on the Migrant Trail. It's written by an American archaeologist, but he was looking at the migration route from Central America, from Mexico to America. So he basically did his work on the desert of the southwest of America and trying to argue that the American government trying to use the landscape as an excuse to kill lots of migrants on the route. And then he was using the archaeological and the ethnographic method to document this whole migration process. And it's actually very, very good book to read. And then I read it because it's being translated into Chinese in Taiwan last year. And I was writing a recommendation for that book. And it was really a nice book, and we can see how archaeology can help us to understand our current conditions. In America, it's the migration from Central America to North America is a big issue for the American, right? Their border policy is one of the big political debates in the country. And then archaeologists can use archaeological research to tell the government that what they did in that area is really cruel. Violate the human rights, and then how they disrespect so many human lives, and then there are so many people dying on the route. And it's not because of the excuse that the government gives, saying that it's all attributed to the landscape. It's actually the government policy also push people to pass through that route, which is really dangerous for the human beings. That's one book. And the other book is The Buried, an archaeology of the Egyptian Revolution. And it's also very interesting. There are three lines of the story. One is talking about Arabian Revolution. The other line is talking about the archaeology work in Egypt. And then the third line is talking about the daily life in the one of the communities of Cairo. And it's written by a journalist who is living there for a while and to document the life after the Arabian Revolution. But he's really good at like connecting these different lines of stories together and make us to rethink about the archaeological interpretation that we gave in this area. Because Egyptian archaeology is so famous, but it's actually most of the work was done by the foreign archaeologists, Europeans, and then there are certain perspective of talking about the archaeology layer. But the author, this journalist living there, and then look at the people actually living on that land, and then how they perceive the archaeology. And then through his interview with the archaeologist working there, he started to question all these assumptions and all the way that we think about the past, all the narrative that we constructed about archaeology in Egypt, how that was influenced by the Western ideology, and then how the local people will make the connection between their lives with the archaeology and then their current life. So it's a very interesting book to read.
And about the archaeology, you already told me that it's pretty hard to find something in English.
Archaeology of Taiwan, yeah, it's very, very specific, I would say. Yeah, it's all like published in the journals, right? The academic journals. And then there's actually one book that introduced archaeological work in southwestern part of Taiwan. It's because of the, you know, there's a very big industrial park in southwestern of Taiwan. It's called Tainan Industrial Park. And in that industrial park, there are many, many archaeological sites. So there's almost 20 years of rescue excavation happened there. So there was a small book that is translated in English that is documenting all these excavations there.
So thank you very much for recommending these books. And especially thank you for taking the time to this interview.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Archaeo Podcast. If you like it, please subscribe to follow our channel and support us by some likes or comments. For more information, you can visit the Patreon website, which is free of charge for everybody, and you can find there more information about our guests and their work. All of the links you need are written in the description of this episode.